Hi, everyone. Hi, everyone. Welcome to The Whole Scoop. Remember, we're a health and wellness radio show where our guests are always highly credentialed in their fields. And the goal of this program is to present different and sometimes opposite perspectives to allow the listeners, you, to make informed decisions about what might be the right health approach for them. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian, practicing for over 30 years, and I'm the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. As a healthcare practitioner, it's important for me to provide you highly qualified guests on a variety of topics in order to promote your own health and wellness. Tonight's show is no exception to that. It's called You Just Became a Caregiver, Now What? Please let me remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topic of discussion, it is always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions discussed on this program. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to www.blogtalkradio.com/thewholescoop, and you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Blog Talk Radio. Again, the call-in number is 347-855-8894, and we will be taking questions a little bit later on, and when we do, I'll be calling out the last four digits of your telephone number, and at that time, just remember to press the number 1 to become part of the queue for questions if you have a question. With all of that being said, let me tell you who we have tonight, and I'm just I'm honored and thrilled at the same time. This was kind of a last-minute show to put together, and this person is just a fabulous guest. She is Mary Ellen Philbin. She is the Chief Executive Officer of Share the Care. Share the Care is a nonprofit agency that provides services and support to family caregivers since it was incorporated in 2002. Prior to that, she was the Program Director for Community-Based Long-Term Care at Share the Care's parent agency, the Christian Service Center for Central Florida. Share the Care serves over 1,400 families in Central Florida each year and is the largest agency of its type in Florida. It is the provider agency for older Americans, the Older Americans Title III E National Family Caregiver Support Program, Florida's Alzheimer's Disease Initiative Respite Program, and is a vendor to 4 area managed care entities under the Medicaid Long-Term Care Program and operates a robust fee-for-service program. Under Mrs. Philbin's leadership, Share the Care has received a variety of national grants and honors, and in 2009, Share the Care was chosen as one of 14 organizations funded nationwide by the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation's Innovative Programs for Family Caregivers Initiative. Mrs. Philbin has a Bachelor of Science degree in political science and has worked for the United States House of Representatives, the Florida State Legislature, and 2 area agencies on aging. She earned her graduate certificate in gerontology from the Center for Aging Education in Lansing, Michigan, and has over 30 years of management experience in aging services, beginning as Director of Older Americans Act Program at Charlotte County Senior Services in Southwest Florida in 1984. And all that being said, let's bring Mary Ellen on. Mary Ellen, are you with us?
I'm here, Carol.
Hi. Thank you. I'm just going to say so a very heartfelt thank you for being here and for being so available at such a short notice. Thank you.
Well, I'm very grateful for the offer to be able to be on, and particularly on this topic. You just became a caregiver, because I think it's one of the most important issues that we deal with in my field, and that is the people that just start out in their caregiving journey and them not necessarily knowing the path that they're looking at and having no idea about the resources that are available and having lots of questions but no idea who to ask. And so I think it's a super important topic. And the main reason that I care about that topic is because if we were able to reach family caregivers sooner, earlier in their caregiving journey, I believe that the impact our services would have would be so much greater. Often caregivers don't call us or don't ask for help in general until they're at the end of their rope. They've already reached a stress point that is, you know, incredibly intense. I want to reach people sooner in that trajectory so we can make the experience not so stressful, not so physically intimidating, and easier on both the person that's the caregiver and the person that's being cared for. Hello? I'm not hearing anything. Hello? 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 Hello?
Mary Ellen, can you hear us?
Now I can.
Hello?
Yes, I couldn't. I'm so sorry. Can you hear me?
I got you.
Hello?
Could you not hear me?
I couldn't hear a thing you were saying. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no. All right. Let me just back up for maybe I'm not sure what you heard or didn't hear, but I think we're back on now. I think we had a little bit of a lapse there. So
okay.
Let me just go through that for a minute and say I want to define caregiver, and that's what
I was
just saying. I was saying just the basic term caregiver, referring to anyone who provides assistance to someone else who is in some degree incapacitated, needs help, like a husband who has suffered a stroke, a wife with Parkinson's disease, a mother-in-law with cancer, a grandfather with Alzheimer's, a son with traumatic brain injury from a car accident, a friend taking care of a friend with AIDS, or a child with muscular dystrophy. Any of that, all of that constitutes a caregiver. So I just wanted to back up for a minute and just kind of do the basics of, we're talking about the gamut of caregiving tonight. Would you agree with that?
Right, I'm not sure if you could heard my earlier statement about people learning that they're a caregiver or understanding that they're a caregiver earlier on in the experience.
Yes, I got that. I'm not sure if anybody else did. I'm getting some text here that's saying, I think we're back. I think everybody's hearing us now.
Okay. So. All right, well, I apologize if
but,
it was on my
side. I don't
side,
know what happened. I apologize.
But let me just say the answer is this. I learned from experts that our community is not alone in this. It's pretty much universal, and that is caregivers don't think of themselves as caregivers. A lot of times they say, we call them justas. I'm just a daughter. I'm just a wife. I'm just a husband. I'm just a brother, just a sister. People don't think of themselves as caregivers because it starts slowly. In the beginning, you may just be taking your mom to go grocery shopping once in a while, or doing the lawn for her, or, you know, and soon maybe she can't drive and you're driving her to places and picking her up and that type of thing. Those are the early phases of caregiving. At that point, you're not just being a good daughter, you are a caregiver. You're at the beginning of caregiving. And usually what I say to people is that's just the beginning, meaning that there's going to be more and there's probably going to be, greater responsibility coming in your future if you are the one. Pretty much there's usually one in every family that kind of surfaces as the main caregiver, and this is the time to prepare.
Okay. So, I didn't even think about that, but you're right. It does start early, and it's not something that you even think about. It's just something you do. If you're attached to your family and you want to help a family member and you know that they may not do as well driving anymore, you just do it. You just take care of it. So you don't think about it, and you do become a, I'm just a daughter, I'm just a son, I'm just this. So you're saying that if you were to look at it from the perspective of, okay, things are changing at this point, now what do I need to do? Would that make the process of as it evolves, would it make it a little bit easier?
It would change everything because there are a few things that you can do early on that you can't do later on. For example, early on, you can talk to the person that you're caring for about how they would like to be cared for. You know, what would their preferences be in terms of care? Especially when we're talking about dementia or, other kinds of cognitive impairment that people have, often as they progress through, they're no longer able to have that conversation. And I have sat with caregivers many times and said, well, what would your mother want to do now? What would her choice be? And it's unbelievable how many people haven't had that conversation. I would say that that's the first and most important thing that a family member can do, and the very beginning of caregiving, is have the talk with the person that you're caring for. And the second thing that you can do is do your homework. Find out what might possibly be available for you in terms of support in your community, because it varies by community. And I have people that, here in Central Florida, we have people that moved down from up north. They were getting an amazing gamut of services in the state of New York. Well, everything's different here. So you need to know what's available in the place where you live or the place where you're to live. And you need to know how to get a hold of the people that can provide those services, what type of process and applications you have to go through to apply or become eligible for services that might help you. And sometimes it means just doing the research and putting it away in the drawer until the time comes when you need to make the phone call. But that is far preferable to the person that calls in the crisis. And that is the norm for us, unfortunately, is the people call in the crisis. And then we have a whole nother experience in terms of trying to provide support.
So, and let's just take that. I mean, I'm really grateful that we're talking about the early stages of this for people who are listening and saying, now what do I do? Because that is the name of the show. But let's take it a step further, because I'm sure there are people listening going, okay, but here I am and I am in the crisis and I don't know how to find the right services and my head is spinning. And honestly, As I've said, this particular subject is personal for me. And if I hadn't been in healthcare and if I hadn't been exposed to all of these different types of services throughout my career, I don't know that I would have been able to be much support or much help to my family, because I think my head would still be spinning. So what does the average person do that doesn't have that as a background or doesn't have that as that kind of exposure? Where do they start? What do they do?
Well, I think that the typical case would be mom breaks her hip and goes into the hospital, and then when she's discharged, a million different choices have to be made about her care that wouldn't have had to be made prior to that. So that's the that's the thing that you cannot plan for. And so what do people do? Well, in an acute medical care situation like that, and you're in a hospital, you turn to your discharge planner and you say, what can I do? She can't take care of herself and I don't live with her, and what are we going to do? And they'll provide you with a list of home health agencies, or if the person needs rehab, they'll give you a list of that. But usually those services are only the short-term services that are covered often for older people under Medicare, so they're post-acute care. And then as people move into the chronic care arena, the choices are completely different because they are not necessarily traditional healthcare system-based services. They're more on the social service level. So you have to move into being able to know who to call to find out about things like adult daycare or in-home respite, just respite for caregivers, some time off, or, you know, other types of agencies that maybe provide homemaker services or transportation or even a case manager to come in and visit with the person or the family and decide what's the best, what are the best choices in terms of your situation. I would say no matter where you live, I know for a fact that no matter where a person lives in the United States, there's an area agency on aging that represents your area. And that is where all of the federal funding goes through, and often in many states and in Florida for sure, the state funding for aging services goes through the area agency as well. That would be the first place to call because you could find out the agencies that provide the different services. And many people don't call anymore. You know, we do our research online. So search out the Google search area agency on aging in your area and look at their website and see what's provided. You can call the different providers directly to find out, you know, what your mother or your family member
right.
is eligible for in terms of services. That would be the first place to go, I would say, especially if it's an aging person. But caregiving isn't just something that's for, you know, people caring for somebody that's older. And, you know, Share the Care is a caregiver-specific program. It's not age-related. And as soon as you move into the adult, we're caring for an adult that's not over 60 years of age, you're looking at a whole other spectrum of services. So it gets very complicated for people.
And that complication is only coupled by what you just described to me is, okay, and I asked the question, where do you start? That is exactly where you start. And those are the dynamics of getting started and doing the groundwork. But what is also attached to that is all the emotional issues involved with just that in itself. And, you know, you run the gamut in your head. Can I take care of this person? Can this person still stay at home? Or, you know, am I doing the right thing all the way around? And then we have to talk about what's best for the caregiver. So, So if the first step is area on aging to just find out what services are available, is there another first step for the actual caregiver?
There are caregiver support groups everywhere. But you still have to find the right place to call. One of the things that you were talking about, our grant that we received from the Harry and Jeanette Weinberg Foundation, we developed a tool. It's an internet tool. It's a caregiver self-assessment, and anybody can go on it. It's caregivercentral.org, and it's about a 10-minute questionnaire, and it's coded. So you answer questions about your caregiving experiences. What are you doing? Who are you caring for? What is their age? What's your emotional status? What's theirs? What's your physical status? What's theirs? How many hours do you spend caring for the person? What kind of activities are you involved in caring for them? And you put all of this information in. Like I said, it takes about 10 minutes. And as it's coded for your particular answers. And at the end of that, you'll get a list. You receive a list of services that you would likely benefit from based on your answers.
Wow, now, fabulous.
I know. It's a
you want to give
cool
that...
tool.
I'm sorry.
Yes, caregivercentral.org. So
right.
www.caregivercentral.org. And anywhere in the country, you can use that tool. In two areas of the country, here in Central Florida and in the Boston area, you can actually get access to a list of service providers or case management providers that you can call for that community and get services. Everybody else, what they'll get is a list of services that they'd likely need, a definition of what those services are, because a lot of people don't even understand, you know, what is adult daycare, what's assisted living, what's home
right.
health. And then if you get a definition of those services, then they also give you criteria on how to choose quality services. So questions
to ask. Oh, wow. I mean, you just said a mouthful right there, quality services. I mean, that was going to be another follow-up to the question. How do you find the right one? I mean, so
A lot of it's workforce-based. And in Florida, we have a kind of a crisis that's a precursor to the rest of the country. And that is that we have a shortage of people that are doing are the paraprofessional caregivers, so like the home health aides and the people that work in nursing homes and the, you know, the actual hands-on providers of care services that you would get if you went to a home health agency or your mother lived in a nursing home. We have a shortage of that in Florida, which means that quality is not always assured, because there aren't enough people to do it, and so many people get hired that maybe are less than qualified. So it's super important to ask the different questions that you need to ask of the providers, to have an opportunity to meet the person that would possibly be the aide that would come in before they actually provide the service, have a comfort level with the management of them, because many of them are franchises, the different agencies that you call. And so it's not like a consistent corporate ownership. It's a different people in different communities running it. And so the quality could vary from, one geographic area to another.
So just to clarify that, so you could conceivably know the name from a television commercial and call that name in your area, and it may vary in quality because it's a franchise situation. Is that what you're saying?
Because franchises generally have minimum standards that they have to meet, and which is great. But management of the particular agencies is very important too. And a lot of people, I mean, the first thing, this kind of goes back to the conversation you have with the person that you're caring for, or knowing the person that you're caring for well. A lot of family caregivers ask to have the same person come to their house if they're coming 3 times a week, some agencies will do and others are unable to do based on, the number of workers that they employ and their workload. So, if that's a quality issue, that's something you need to determine up front with the agencies. There are many, many, many variations on this, but I'll tell you that if you have a bad experience, it becomes clear pretty quickly. But the good experience is, then people want to hold on to that agency and continue to work with it. A lot of people try to hire people under the table, or, hire private duty people that are working for themselves. And that can be a dangerous thing unless you know people that know these people and you have some way to check references for these people. You have no idea who you're letting into your home. So,
that's right.
I warn people about that. Right.
Yeah. So we're gonna use the Caregiver Central at this point, and I'm gonna move to going into taking care of the caregiver for a minute, okay? But before I do that, I just want to remind everybody that they're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio on Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Carol Ferraci, and you can find me at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. We're talking tonight with Mary Ellen Philbin. She is the Chief Executive Officer of Share the Care, a nonprofit agency in Central Florida, serving over 1,400 families. And you will find her at www.helpforthecaregiver.org. Helpforthecaregiver.org.
No, the caregiver. Just Help for Caregivers. Plural.
Oh, okay.
No,
I have it wrong.
No, the. Yeah.
Okay, so help for caregiver. Does it have an S at the end of it?
Yes.
It does. Okay. So help for caregivers.org.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Got it. And then so we'll make sure that that's corrected too, and we'll give it out again. So that all being said, let's move to the caregiver because I think that sometimes, and like I said, this subject is personal for me, and in my situation, I have my mother being the primary caregiver for my father. And in many cases, pretty much on a daily basis. I'm more worried about my mother than I am my father because she's not taking care of herself. And she's heard this over and over and over again about I'm supposed to take care of myself. And I know my mother, she's not said this to me, but I know her well enough to know that she's thinking, how am I supposed to do that when I'm taking care of him? And I am taking care of myself because I'm okay. I'm not feeling it. But at the same time, I know her well enough to know that she's doing all this stuff. She's completely exhausted. She's not saying that because she's such a wonderful wife and mother and caregiver that that's just her job. So
right.
She's not alone. I know she's not alone. So what do I do? What do people like me do in those situations for her?
First of all, your mother may never listen to you because my mother never listened to me. But so you seek out other professionals to help do an intervention basically on your mother, and your mom's putting your dad first, and that's what caregivers do. And when you put somebody else first, you neglect yourself. And so in that context, she may slowly be hurting herself in a way that she doesn't even know she is. Here's what I would say to your mother if she and I were having a professional discussion about her as a caregiver and she's saying she's fine. I would say to her, you are fine now, but what happens when you are not fine, if something happens to you because of you not taking care of yourself? What if you have a heart attack or you have some kind of vascular incident or you have a fall or, you know, he falls, you try to lift him and you hurt your back? Let's just take yourself out of the equation. What happens to your husband if something happens to you? And often that's the way to reach caregivers, because the first person on their mind, the person they want to care for, the only one that they even think about caring for is the person who's ill, their husband, their mother, their whomever. If you say, look, by hurting yourself, you could be hurting them, then maybe you can get their ear sometimes. And really, this is the case. I've had many, many circumstances in my career where we've seen caregivers die before the person they're caring for because they've taken themselves to the limit and ruined their own health.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, and then they don't get to give the person what they've promised to give them. A lot of times people promise they're not going to put somebody in a nursing home. You know, that
right.
I promised my husband I'd never put him in a nursing home. Well, guess what? Maybe you're in a nursing home now. And what's going to happen to him? And, you know, there are no choices. And so maybe sometimes making littler choices sooner, you know, like to take a break, to, get some help, definitely getting help, to ask family. A lot of people don't even tell family. You know what's going on with your parents. You would not believe how many people come to Florida for the holidays, see what's going on with their parents, and call us in an emergency. I had no idea my dad was this impaired and my mom was doing all this, you know. So, trying to get a hold of people earlier to take a little bit in the beginning so that they don't need a lot later on. And then lose all their ability to make choices, the choices that everybody wants to have. Usually the number one choice that people express is their desire to stay at home.
Yep.
And so...
And you know what? There are a lot of movements now to keep people in their homes, and there are a lot of resources, but it does all hinge on the fact on who's taking care of that person in their home. And if there's no one to take care of that person, then... You can't stay at home. It's just that simple.
You can do anything if you have the resources. You know,
well,
I mean, that's what I tell people. You know, if you have enough money, you can buy anything you want. You can buy around-the-clock care at the Ritz-Carlton if you want.
Right.
You know, it's usually what we're trying to deal with is people that have limited resources and they don't know how long those resources are going to have to last. And so when you talk about round-the-clock home care, that can get very expensive, particularly if it's going to last over a period of years.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you can work with people to take short intervals of care, respite breaks, where the caregiver can, there's someone comes in for 4 hours a few times a week, the caregiver can get out and take care of their own health issues. I always say number one, first thing, go to the doctor if you haven't been to the doctor. You know, do the things for yourself. Then after you start getting used to having some respite and some time off, start doing the things that you would be doing if you weren't so involved in caregiving, like spending time with other family members and friends. These are, vital activities for people to maintain their mental health. Caregivers are it's well known that family caregivers, up to 70%, if they were diagnosed, could be diagnosed with clinical depression because they don't do anything for themselves. They don't go out and meet with friends. They don't have a social life of their own. They don't do the things they used to enjoy. They don't have time for it, or they're too stressed to be able to think about it. So, you know, how do you overcome that? And if I was talking to your mother, I would say if you thought that by taking care of yourself that you would be a better caregiver, what are some of the things that you used to do before you were a caregiver that you don't do now? And can you start doing them again?
Yeah, and can you start to incorporate those at least a little bit, you know, more so than nothing, and move yourself to a point where you feel like you're yourself again a little bit, right? You know, and then
I facilitate
that.
A support group, all that, you know, and what I tell people sometimes when I give homework at the end, and the homework is almost always plan something for yourself so you have something to look forward to. Because that's something that caregivers don't have, is something to look forward to for themselves. And it can be a little thing like a pedicure or a massage or something, you know, get your hair done. Or you know, some people even, you know, plan a little vacation and go to my grandson's graduation, you know, those kind of things. Something to look forward to, because that's something we all have in normal life, is something that we have to look forward to in our future. And when you're a caregiver and you know that you're homebound and there's no one else that can do it like you, you don't have the opportunity to do those things. But in reality, you do have the opportunity. You just imagine that you don't. So, and then the whole thing about nobody can do it like I can do it. Well, that's probably true. Nobody probably can take care of your dad like your mom takes care of your dad. Yet, again, how about sometimes good enough is good enough? You know, somebody takes adequate care of your dad so that your mom can get the breaks so she can be there longer for the duration of taking care of your dad. You know,
I think that's something to think about too, in that, you know, the care is never going to be what you would give. And so you have to reason with yourself in terms of, it's good enough. It's good care. It's just not the same as what I would do. And let it go, because the guilt factor attached to, well, he's not getting this or she's not getting that, and this is how I would normally do this, or he's gonna get upset or she's gonna be upset if I don't get this done, or he can't, you know, that that person's not as good as me is doing this or whatever. You gotta let some of that go, right? I mean, you've got it. Your mental health is just so important, and no wonder so many people become depressed.
Well, it's funny, because at support groups sometimes people will say, well, I can't leave my mom alone. She might fall. Or, you know, and I'm not saying that people should necessarily leave people alone. But I will say to the person, your mother might fall even if you're there. I mean, because if you're standing across the room from your mother, she could still fall. So, you know, that's my example for caregivers about, you know, something bad could happen if I'm not there. Well, something bad could happen if you are there. So, you know, that's not a good excuse not to do something for yourself, not to take some time for yourself there. And remember, the people that they're caring for are on a trajectory to probably progress through an illness and ultimately end their lives.
Right.
And it's just a matter of, we don't know how that will transpire. And, right. you know, and so most of the time we are not talking about people who are going to get 100% well.
Right.
So,
and so,
you know,
what you are doing is you're trying to maintain the highest quality of life that you can for both people, the caregiver and the person receiving the care, correct?
Oh, well, because if you don't and you spend 5-10 years taking care of your husband and you have given up every part of yourself, you are likely to live on beyond your husband. And what will your life be like?
Right.
You know, you've given up your friends, you've given up all of your, you know, the things that you enjoyed. And so how do you recapture any life after caregiving? Because there will be life after caregiving. So, you know, those are some of the ways that we try to get people to access help or take help. And then I want to also say that too few people actually give family members an opportunity to help them. And I say it that way.
Talk about that a minute.
The opportunity to help somebody is a great gift. I always say that to people, you know, oh, you trust me enough to sit with Dad. That's really cool. You know, thank you for letting me do something meaningful and help you at the same time. But I listen to folks so many times over and over saying, oh, I can't bother my son. I can't bother my daughter. They're busy. They have kids. They have lives of their own. And, you know, if their children were hearing them say that, I would say that in most cases, their adult children would be furious not to be asked, not to be included in what's going on in their parents' lives. So, you know, I don't think it's a good excuse.
I would have
not
to agree
to ask
with that person.
Good. And you know what? There's always one adult child that surfaces as the, you know, basically the leader in caregiving, I always say. And they often get into the, you know, I'm the only one that can do it because the other siblings are, you know, all over the country or they don't, you know, many, many reasons with siblings. Yet there are lots of ways to give people opportunities to help. By maybe they can't actually be there physically, but they could contribute financially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have a responsibility of calling mom, you know, 3 times a week to cheer her up, or, you know, work as a team and don't assume the other person wouldn't or doesn't want to be a part of it. And, you know, of course, there's always going to be the ones that don't. And I hear a lot about that in support group with caregivers, but you know, that I think that's the exception. I think most relatives, most people that are related to the people that need care would like to be able to do something. So
I agree.
Take a team approach, yeah.
Right, I totally agree. So anyway, I just want to remind everybody that if you have a question, please press the number 1, and that way you get in the queue for asking a question. And that'll alert me that you do have a question so I can make sure that I call on you. So I'm just going to remind everybody we're going to start taking questions relatively soon here. I think we've got some on the blog coming up. So I'll ask a couple from that in a minute. But I want to kind of finish the point here with the caregiver in terms of taking care of themselves because I think we covered that quite well with the aspect of, you know, what happens to you, what happens to the person you're caring for if something should happen to you. But secondarily to that, they do need to get out. But is it you're saying it's okay to ask family. It's okay. And not just immediate family, but extended family or friends or utilize the support group that you already have around you. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, often faith communities have folks that are trained to do home visiting and all of that. You know, people, I just think people don't like to ask. And one way that I encourage people to ask is I say, what would you do if somebody asked you for help? And
right.
Most people would help. You know, they would help. And then how would they feel about that if they were asked for help? Well, they'd feel good about that. So,
right.
You know, with the assumption that we're a burden to others when we ask them to help us, I think, is a false, assumption. I think that we should assume that we're actually sharing the blessing of being able to provide loving care to somebody. You know, that maybe by us keeping it all to ourselves, in a way, we're keeping part of that being able to feel good about the situation after the situation is over. We're robbing others of that, being able to feel that way. And, you know, and you were talking about guilt earlier, and there's a lot of guilt, you know, about what people don't do or what people think they don't do right or what, you know, or the way that they feel about what they're doing. Are they, maybe they're angry that they're the ones that are stuck being the caregivers, or maybe they're frustrated by some of the behaviors of the person that they're caring for, and they might yell at the person they're caring for, or, you know, say things that they regret later. And, you know, this is my kind of my bumper sticker saying about guilt, and that there's only one good reason to feel guilty, and that is if you do something intentionally to hurt another person. And in caregiving, the things that we feel bad about are almost always omissions, you know, things we feel like we could have done that we didn't do. It's not like this, I purposely tried to hurt mom or hurt mom's feelings. If it comes out of some kind of a spontaneous emotion or some kind of a, I couldn't be there on that day, but I could be there the next day, but I feel guilty that I couldn't be there earlier, you know, is that a reasonable emotion? And, you know, I think caregivers are prone to guilt because they care so much about what they're doing and who they're caring for.
Well,
but it,
I think,
go ahead.
Oh no, I was going to agree with you on that, but then I was also going to follow that up with, do they also have a tendency to become reclusive as a result of that? Because they're kind of like at their wits' ends, not really knowing what to do and feeling guilty all the time, and or not all the time, but a good deal of the time for those reasons that you just said. It's like a big catch 22, and the caregiver has to be conscious and cognizant of the fact that I must take care of myself. It's the only thing that's going to keep them from falling into that pit, right?
Oh, absolutely. Because the more stressed out you get, the more likely you are to do something or say something you regret. So then,
right.
And then comes the guilt and everything. It's very, very cyclical. I cannot recommend more strongly going out and finding a caregiver support group. And most people think they don't need it. You know, they're, oh no, I don't need it. I'm not that bad. I'm not, you know, my person's not that bad. I'm okay. You know, it's the same thing, you know, in trying to get people to take support services. But if you go to a support group and you listen to other people and find out that the emotions that you're having are not unusual, as a matter of fact, they're normal given the circumstances that you are in, and you see that other people have been able to work through that guilt and accept help from others and, you know, work themselves into a more healthy emotional state and physical state from taking help, plus the peer encouragement, the other people in the support group that see the situation you're in and recognize it as their situation or their previous situation and encourage you through that situation using mechanisms that they use to get through it. Because really, I think the most upsetting thing to me about caregiving is that everyone thinks they're alone in it. And in reality, they're all alone together. They're all going through the same experience alone. And if you can meet other people that are going through that experience, I have seen it change people's lives to know that the way that you're feeling and the things that you're doing are not unusual, that you are normal, that this is a process and you're going through a process just like everyone else. It's life changing. So I highly recommend support groups.
Well, I think Does it matter the size of the support group? I mean, do you want a large support group? Do you want a small support group? Does it matter if there are three people or 10 people or 50 people?
Well, I mean, it depends on what's available in your community. I mean, here in Central Florida, there's a lot of different kinds of support groups. There's support groups for people that are caring for people with Alzheimer's or people that are caring for people with Parkinson's or caring for people with head injury or whatever. Our support group is just for caregivers in general, because our assumption is that caregivers, no matter what's wrong with the person they're caring for, go through many of the same things, you know, because it's stressful regardless of what's wrong with the person. But there, and then some support groups are more informational, like they have a speaker and they talk on a topic, and some of them are more just talk therapy where you share your experiences, and some of them are a combination of both. But regardless of which one you choose, you're still going to be in the room with other people like you. And that's the important part.
And that is the key to a support group. It's people that are sharing an experience. And so you don't walk into a support group saying, I don't know why I'm here, as much as you go and you say, am I really going to learn something? And then you find out the whole room is like you are. It has to be an absolutely rewarding experience. You know?
Well, I've seen it change people's lives. It doesn't do it the first time, you know. I mean, but people develop relationships with others. They take advice from others. They realize that there are, you know, things they can do about circumstances they're involved in that they thought were hopeless situations. And, you know, other people that have had to make difficult choices and had to live with them, you know, like the choice to choose institutional care over home care, which for some people is inevitable because the caregiver's not physically able to maintain the person at home. And accepting that, oh, my gosh, what a process that is, even if you know that you're not well enough to take care of the person. It's important to have support through that process.
Right. So we're running low on time. So I'm going to take a couple of questions. We've got a couple of questions here on the board. So I'm going to take a couple of questions. And when I need to qualify, you know, if you've been listening to the show tonight, we're talking with Mary Ellen Philbin from Share the Care. And you want to give that website one more time, Mary Ellen?
Sure. The Share the Care website is helpforcaregivers, plural, with an S, .org. And then if you want to do the caregiver assessment, self-assessment, it's caregivercentral.org for the assessment.
And when we do call on questions, I'm going to call the last four digits of your telephone number. And when we close the questions, when we're finished with your questions, you need to press the number one again. Just to kind of close off from the question, I think if you've listened to our show in the past, we did have some technical difficulties with the questions, and I was told that before. I shared it with everyone that you have to press one after we're done. So with that being said, let's go to caller 6480. 6480.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi,
Carol. Hi. I'm calling. A quick comment. I had the privilege of being a caregiver for my mother for 14 years. 12 years I was assisted by my father, and it is very true that the caregiver oftentimes goes first. My father did, due to he was stubborn and didn't want to accept help. So I know what it's like when you say the caregiver often goes first. My question is, I now have the privilege of being a paid caregiver for somebody who's taking care of their spouse. And the person who's the main caregiver who pays me for respite care does not take care of herself. And we've talked to her over and over, and she will say, yes, you're right. And for that hour, she does try to take care of herself, but she just has so much guilt that she doesn't let herself enjoy the few hours that I'm there for herself, because she will say, I feel bad because he can't go, or I feel bad because he can't enjoy this. And even though she has children that supports her, and wants her to do things and encourage her to do things, she'll say she's going to do it, but it's very hard for her to follow through. How can I help her help herself?
Well, if that question's to me, I would say, first of all, she's already accepted help because you're there. And that is a great first step. And you know, a lot of people won't let somebody in the door to help them. So you're already providing a great service. And not only that, but she has you to talk to, which is more than a lot of caregivers have. You know, I think that a support group, I hate to sound like a broken record, but possibly a support group to meet other people so that she gets, sometimes people need permission to do the thing they potentially will feel guilty about doing, like enjoying themselves when the other person is sick. So, you know, to get some support from other people and make sure that the kids are talking to her, you know, regularly about and giving some concrete suggestions about things to do. Sometimes it's like, well, just go out and enjoy yourself. Well, what possibly could I enjoy while he's sitting home sick? Well, have the kids suggest things that she used to enjoy, or actually set up appointments for her. Make it as simple as possible for her to, you know, take advantage of that time that you're giving her by being there. So, like, if she enjoys getting her hair done, make sure that there's a regular weekly appointment and that she can go and she has a way of getting there. Maybe she used to enjoy having lunch with friends. Make arrangements, you or the kids, make arrangements for the friends to call her and invite her out. Those type of things. It's complicated, but I will tell you that once people start doing it and they do it a few times, they realize the benefit and are more likely to continue to do it.
Okay,
does that help?
She does have a weekly hair appointment, but she takes him with her to get his hair washed and trimmed, and she would never agree to not take him to that. But, yeah, we should start suggesting that she goes out more with friends, and I guess we're going to have the friends make appointments. She does have a daughter who's very supportive, but she lives out of state. I mean, the daughter checks on her 4, 5, 6 times a day and does everything she can do to make her mom's life easier. And she's the one that insisted her mom get a caregiver, or her mom probably still would not have one. And,
right, but she took it. She didn't say no.
Yes.
So that is progress. So, you know, I think the first step has been taken, and that I would look into seeing if take away every barrier that she has to doing it, and then she'll have no excuse not to.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. And I'm also going to check out the website that you suggested. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Carol.
Great. Good luck.
Thank you. And press 1 when we're done, okay?
Okay. Thanks, lady.
Thank you so much. Okay. I think you said something really important there, Mary Ellen. The fact that person accepted the care is the first step, and that I don't know that really gets recognized the way that it should, because it's a huge step. It's really just a huge step for someone, and
right.
I think that you saying that really just even hit home with me. So yeah, thanks for enlightening that, for bringing that up. That's good.
And hopefully it's just step one in the process. Yeah.
Right. We've got another caller here, so do you want to take another question?
Sure.
Okay. We're going to go with caller 4977. 4977.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
How you doing? Hi. My question is, what does Medicare offer for seniors that are still at home and need services to help them prior to an assisted living situation or a nursing home?
Well, that's a very good question, because I think that there's a lot of confusion about that. And Medicare is specifically health care and post-acute care. When I say post-acute, I mean some big health incident causing a person to go to a hospital is then followed by Medicare services, which are often home health care or therapies. And they only last, they're only reimbursable as long as there's a medical need to continue those services. And they also have a certain number of days limit that people can utilize Medicare to pay for those type of services, because after those days go by, it's considered to be custodial care or long-term care. It's no longer post-acute or post, you know, serious health incident. So Medicare doesn't do anything long-term in home. Medicare covers your primary care physician and any kind of medical needs you have. But in terms of services in the home beyond that acute experience, Medicare does not cover. Now, if people qualify income-wise and level of care-wise, so they have to be low income and they have to have a certain level of impairment, they could qualify in most states for a Medicaid waiver program. So it used to be Medicaid only paid for skilled nursing care in a nursing home. But most states now have a waiver to utilize some of those Medicaid dollars to help people stay at home. But they have to meet the income and the level of care requirements for Medicaid. Those are the two big federally funded programs. Now, many states, like Florida, have some state funding to complement that and to provide some of the long-term care, and they don't have as stringent of requirements in terms of income or impairment. People can be less impaired and people can have more income and still access some services. But I think just from the length of my answer, you figured out that it's a pretty complicated system.
Yes. That was very helpful, though. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. And remember to press 1 when we're finished, okay? Just for whatever reason, they're telling me that the callers need to press 1 afterwards to kind of clear the call. So thank you very much.
Great show, Carol. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Mary Ellen, we've come to almost the end of our time. Is there anything that you want to talk about just to kind of sum everything up? Is there anything we didn't touch on that you wanted to bring up? We've got just a few minutes left, and we can certainly do that.
Well, I would just say that people need to remember that if you have a family, you're likely to be a caregiver. I mean, you have loved ones on planet Earth. Caregiving is going to come into play one way or another. Either you'll be the caregiver or somebody will care for you. So if it's a universal experience, and, you know, I think that's kind of what's lacking in our society in terms of our understanding about caregiving. It's a universal experience. No one's alone in this. It will happen to all of us if we're lucky enough to be in a family. And so because of that, then we need to understand that the family aspect that makes us likely to be caregivers also provides us with opportunities for help and support during our caregiving experience. So, you know, it's not unique that people get involved in this. Lately, it's been getting a lot more exposure, and frankly, it's because people are living longer. We adult children, I'm in my 50s. I have no idea how old you are, Carol, but I'm in my 50s, and we are caregiving for parents in their 80s and 90s.
I'm right there with you. Yep, it's the same thing, yeah.
So it's a universal experience, and society needs to be better at acknowledging that and making services available. And we need, as 50-year-olds, you and I and everybody else that's listening to this program, needs to remember if caregiving is a universal experience, then you owe it to yourself and your family to find out about what's available for caregivers before you get there. So, you know, that would be my, you know, number one reminder, the number one thing to remember from this radio show is just because you don't need it now doesn't mean you won't need it a year from now. And learn what you can learn so that you are not the one that's trying to make decisions in crisis mode.
Wow. That's so powerful. Thank you so much. I can't thank you enough. So what's our next show looking like, Mary Ellen? I'm sure there's more on this topic. What would you like to have Share the Care do on our next show?
Well, I don't know. You know, we started. I think we're just talking about really the front end of the caregiving trajectory. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in the course of caregiving, and one of the really uncharted territories is how do you handle end of life issues, and you know, people trying to make decisions about that, and how do you deal with family members in terms of how you deal with that, because caregiving is the beginning of the end of life. And, you know, or the beginning and the process of the of life ending. And a lot of caregivers don't get that in the beginning. And,
Go ahead.
I just think that if people were more aware of that, then the way that they felt about it and the way that they, you know, went about managing it would be different. So.
I think that is definitely a show that we should do. Are you willing to help me out with that? Okay.
Absolutely.
Then I think everyone listening, we are going to plan that show. Hopefully for early part of next year, we'll get that show in. That being said, Mary Ellen, thank you very much. Everyone, thank you for joining us. I know you had some blog questions. But I read the blog questions as we were talking, and I think we answered most of them. If we did not answer your questions, please catch us on Facebook. I'm happy to forward questions over if we need to, or if there's something that we didn't cover that you'd like to hear. And we're always open to new show ideas. Anything that you're listening or you think that you want to listen to that is a topic of interest for you, please shoot them my way, our way, at The Whole Scoop on Facebook. Our next show will be in 2 weeks on November 12th, and two of your favorites are coming back, and they're coming back together, and they were not together the last time. Doctors Bump and Pache will return, and we are going to talk about managing pain and medications and the vicious cycle that most people face. That's going to be on November 12th. In December, we're going to do health benefits of massage. And then we're going to kick off the new year in January with Tracy Stoppler, one of our favorite guests, is coming back, and we're going to be talking about health and fitness. We're going to start out the new year with everybody else's resolutions. And then from that point on, we're going to be talking about why it's important to have healthcare advocates, why it's important to understand the difference between what those supplements are that you're buying and what you're seeing. So we're booked through most of next year already, so stay tuned. We've got some real good stuff coming up, but this particular show we will get in early in the process of next year. So Mary Ellen, you and I will talk about that. On that note, I'm going to say goodnight to everyone. Thank you so much for listening, and catch us again, okay? Mary Ellen, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Good night.
Nice.